Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
It's Here and Now, and a story now, maybe not for young ears, although it centers around a preschooler named Mia who demanded to be heard. We want to tell the story as it unfolded and as her mother, blogger Mimi LeMay, tells it in a recent essay she wrote because she wanted her child, now five, to read it one day and because she thought it might help other families now. And statistics show many families are going through the same thing. Mimi LeMay joins us in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you, Robin.
Let's go back just a few years to when your child was born. Your first words were, "Hello, princess," and you began buying everything pink.
And matching to my child's older sister as well, because I love to have my two dainty little princesses dressed the same.
Yeah. And then eventually you'd have a third.
The three sisters that I'd always dreamed of having.
Yeah. There was a minor hiccup with Mia. She was knocking into things.
Yes, we called her the honey badger. She was fearless and ferocious and knocked into everything.
Well, you had her diagnosed. It was something called sensory perception disorder.
Yes.
It's a very, very minor thing. Mm-hmm. But it plays a part when Mia was about 2.5 and started to change her clothing 12 times a day.
Yes, it became very concerning for us. She would change into one outfit. We would do a short activity. She'd have a snack. And then suddenly it was, "Mommy, I really need to change." And I would say, "No, you don't. You're fine, Mia." And she would insist and become very, very agitated and throw a tantrum.
Yeah. Well, you knew things. There was something really wrong when she woke up at 2 a.m. begging to change her outfit. You called the pediatrician. They assigned it to the sensory perception disorder. Mm-hmm. She had trouble feeling the clothing against her, so everybody thought that's what it was.
Yes. Sometimes children with sensory perception disorder are sensory seeking because they don't feel sensations quite the same way we do.
Right. But then, just before Mia's third birthday, what happened?
She came to me and my husband and said, "Mommy, I'm not a girl. I'm a boy."
Yeah.
I'm glad that you're moved by it because it was a very painful experience for me. And I wanted to bring it out because I think a lot of parents are afraid to transition their children because they fear that they will be seen as bad parents. I've heard this from parents who have gone through the transition. They've said the first and the worst thing about it, other than losing my son or daughter, as I felt, was the way people looked at me suddenly, and I went from being a great mom to being a terrible mom.
Well, now listeners know, if they didn't already, that we're talking about transgender children. And yes, I had a catch in my throat because Mia's not yet three at this point, and you describe terrible pain, horrible fights. She's starting to behave erratically, barking, not talking to people, and you're frozen in fear.
Frozen in fear, disbelieving, because it just seems impossible that a child so young could be so certain about their gender.
Well, you even talked to people at the gender management clinic at Boston's Children's Hospital, and they said to you that there can be a phase.
Mm-hmm. That sometimes children do grow out of it, but the percentage of children that grow out of it is very high, but what they grow out of is not this kind of consistent, persistent, and insistent identification with a different gender than their sexual biology.
You allowed her to have a different name at home than at school. She could be Mika at home and Mia at school. But then there became a moment you felt you were becoming complicit in her dividing herself. What happened?
The last day of school, all the kids in her class and the parents went out for a pizza lunch. She was sitting at the edge of a group of girls watching the other kids. They were jumbling all over the place, especially the boys were running back and forth wildly across the restaurant, and their parents were admonishing them. And I saw the look on her face, and it broke my heart because I realized that that is something she wanted so badly, to be one of the boys. We had already satisfied a lot of her preferences. The clothing she was wearing were boy clothing. She had shorter hair.
In the dance recital, the teacher allowed her to wear a cummerbund and pants while everybody else wore tutus.
Yes. And yet I saw that my child was lost. I realized that living two divided lives, one at school, one at home, was creating a schism in who she was. And it was not, she was not whole. And I came back from that play date shaken, realizing that my child wasn't whole, because she had shown us so many signs of being an outward person and enjoying company, especially once we had relaxed the atmosphere at home and allowed her to have a boy name at home. And, you know, we didn't have as many fights and things were better. But I realized that that wasn't good enough.
Yeah. So there comes a moment where you and your husband sit your child down and ask Mia what she wants. And what did she say?
At first, she said nothing. And I have to say that was one of the most tense and frightening moments for us, because we needed to communicate to her that we believed her. She had been insistent upon this for close to 2 years now.
Of her four-year-old life.
Yeah. And so I took her hands in mine and I said, I believe you. We believe you. I was crying. And she was looking down at her hands and had this closed-off look on her face. But my husband said to her, we can go to a different school if you want. And she paused in that long pause. And then she said, I want to go to a new school. I want to be a boy always. I want to be called Jacob. And from that day forward, he was Jacob.
Jacob.
That's always been puzzling to us.
Yeah.
It was remarkable. We were trying to prevent the harm that we saw happening. We didn't expect him to suddenly, on a dime, turn around and become a different person, become a happier person. But that's exactly what happened. Within the week of our transition, he started laughing openly, huge guffaws, you know, like the giggles. Mm-hmm. He started standing up tall and actually looking in people's eyes. And the barking and the loping and the tongue hanging out and all those odd antisocial behaviors that he had had previously fell away within the first 2 weeks. And it was remarkable.
What have you learned from specialists? I can hear people saying, no, they're only four. They can't know at four.
There is now a study. It's the first major study of transgender children being done out of the University of Washington. And they are finding so many stories that indeed lead us to believe that a child knows about their gender as early as two, sometimes earlier. And those people who are transgender and are now adults are coming out and telling people, I knew when I was two. We didn't even have a word for it back then.
Obviously, there's a physical component to this. Mm-hmm. You take that up later? How does that?
Well, it's always present in our mind because the choices that we make now, you know, are part of a path. Which is easily, at this point, reversible.
So you're saying there might be a possibility. You're open to there might be a possibility.
We are open to the possibility.
But are you any longer, Mimi, holding out hope for that?
I am not, personally. No, I have seen in Jacob a kind of essential boy energy that I didn't know. I hadn't recognized it before fully. He does want to have the same anatomy as a boy, and he is aware that he does not have it. We have not discussed with him the possibility of surgery yet, but I know he's so much happier. He is all boy, and he is all happy now about that. And I do check in with him sometimes. I say, buddy, I just want to check in with you. I want to know that we're doing right by you. Do you ever miss being Mia? And he says, no, Mommy, I don't. I said, do you ever want to do both? No, I don't. Let me go play. Yeah. And off he is running.
How about you? Do you ever miss Mia?
I used to. You know, the moment of realizing that he was possibly transgender, when it really hit me, I went through a period of horrible grief. Your child is alive, but your child is suddenly gone or leaving rapidly. Mm-hmm. I would wake up early in the morning, and then it suddenly would crash down on me. I might have a transgender child.
You were screaming in your pillow.
Yeah. Realizing how happy he was, he helped me see how this nature of his, that he has a duality, which is sometimes found in nature. And realizing how happy he was and how whole he was becoming made me realize that this was not a curse. This is an opportunity to raise a unique child, a very deep child. And he is part of a community that is right now suffering badly. But that I believe that awareness will at least prompt people to learn more, will help them see that transgender children are out there and being treated brutally by society in many instances, and that that needs to change.
We also discover that Mom is a writer. Her essay is called A Letter to My Son Jacob on His Fifth Birthday. Mm-hmm. And we'll post it at hereandnow.org. Mimi, best to you.
Thank you.
And Mimi points to studies showing transgendered young people have higher suicide rates or bullied. Her goal now is to make life better for them and Jacob. We'll link you to the studies and resources at hereandnow.org, where you can also see pictures. She says she heard from other transgendered people that early childhood photos were destroyed. She says she plans on keeping hers, proudly showing them they are part of Jacob's life.